welcome in to another edition of Brewcast, though not as exciting as it was last week. I promise we're going to have a good show on hand for you today. Looking at the fallout from Michigan's loss to Texas Tech in the Sweet 16, our takeaways from the season, and we've got a lot to get to coming up here. First, got to bring in my co-host Chris Castellani and Anthony Broom. Chris, what's going on, man? How's it feeling after the big, you know, post game, all the feedback that you got?
Well, I mean, it's extremely humbling. It's really cool. It wasn't even a video. As early as probably Sunday morning, it was not a video I was planning on making. The last couple weeks have been really awesome. I mean, there's so much going on in sports, and unfortunately, from my perspective, a lot of it's been negative, but it's led to some good content, including the content we put together here on the Brewcast, so I'm excited.
And bringing in Anthony Broom.
Oh, somebody kill me, please!
I wish you could see my face.
I mean, is there anything else to really say? I mean, that was...
I was not expecting that.
Yeah. This weekend sucked ass. There's just no way. There's no other way for me to put it. I sent this to the group chat yesterday. I was like, because I told you, like, I've been saying this for 3 weeks or 2 weeks, whenever the brackets were announced. Michigan State fans were bitching about their draw, saying Michigan got an easy draw again. We said on that show that there were more teams in Michigan's region capable of beating them than there were in states. They just had to get past Duke, and I thought they would get past Duke. And the only thing I've gotten right this entire tournament is that Michigan State was going to beat Duke. And I hate that my only talent is correctly predicting the things I least want to happen. It's happened with basketball. It's happened with football. It's happened with relationships that I've been in. This is a nightmare. This is an absolute nightmare.
You've got to find a way to monetize that talent, though, to at least kind of, you know, mitigate the losses a little bit.
Well, I mean, they got to give me a site to run. Like, give me the Michigan State site. Give me the Ohio State site. Like, give me something to run that I either don't care about or loathe, and I will be able to see it right down the middle. But I don't think that anybody, I mean, we knew that we'll go, I mean, we'll talk Michigan State. We'll talk Final Four. Michigan, I think we had a feeling they were going to struggle with Texas Tech. I'm not sure if all of us picked them to beat Texas Tech. I think we did. I don't remember. But that, for me, was almost as bad. Almost as bad. I'm not going to go to the level other people have. But that was almost as bad as the Ohio State game from this year. In terms of embarrassment, in terms of just total historic letdown. I won't say incompetence, but just a letdown. That really bothers me. And the takeaways coming out of it sort of bother me as well. And we'll get into that. I don't want to take up too much of the intro sounding like sour grapes and sounding salty, but it just, why? Why?
Well, let's get into it right now. I mean, no time like the present right here. That was probably the most miserable I've been watching Michigan basketball since, I don't know, maybe the year that they missed out on the entire postseason. What was that, like 2015?
15. They were 16 and 16.
Yeah, that was so. That game against Texas Tech was probably the most miserable I've been watching a Michigan basketball game, considering everything that was on the line. You know, I know Michigan had had performances like that. I mean, Penn State this year was miserable, but you had a lot of season left, right? This year, it was all, you know, you had a chance at the Elite Eight, even in a couple of years ago when they lost to Oregon. Like, Derek Walton had a shot to send him to the Elite Eight. They missed. It was a fun game to watch. It was disappointing, but at the same time, they played well. This game was just, I mean, from the get-go, they just, was it just me? Or did it seem like they were almost too scared of Texas Tech? Like, they were playing too timid against Texas Tech. It was weird, and it wasn't something I was familiar with seeing out of this Michigan basketball team and really just the program in general.
Well, I think, and this is really interesting to me. I kind of all of our different reactions to this game, because I'm one of those people who, like, yes, the Texas Tech loss
seems like forever ago.
When was it? Thursday? Was abysmal. Yeah, I know, was abysmal. It was you know, the weakest performance Michigan basketball's put together in years. It was the weakest tournament performance probably ever, but I was so much more comfortable, I guess, with I am more comfortable losing that way than losing, say, the way Purdue lost on Saturday. I'm just like, it was not heartbreak to me, which, and I know a lot of people probably share a different opinion.
To be fair, and I'm not going to cut you off, but you were never really like 100% on with this team, like, throughout the year.
That's true. That is true. And it, I'm not going to pat myself on the back, but I do think that there's a lot of the issues with this team from, you know, probably January, February. I would say January, right in kind of before/into the new year. I was seeing holes in this team that I felt were not necessarily that were, I'm sorry, that I felt were fixable, but even if they were to be temporarily fixed, had the chance of being opened again. And that's kind of what we saw on Thursday. Now, as far as Michigan being timid against Texas Tech, I think both Michigan and the country realized on Thursday, just how good Chris Beard's group was. I mean, I think we knew, I think we kind of took for granted the fact that, you know, it was really cool. They won the Big 12 for, you know, the first non-Kansas team to do it since, Jesus, well, it was at 2005. They won the regular season Big 12 title, but, you know, the Big 12 wasn't that great this year, maybe. They are a spectacularly well-coached team and a fierce defensive team. And I don't know about if I would use the word timid as much as I would say unprepared, which is not a word I want to throw around, especially with a Coach Beilein team, but I don't think they were ready for this game necessarily, mentally. And I think once they got into it, it just seemed like whatever could have gone wrong did. And Texas Tech is not a team you want to get behind against. And that, like, Michigan was down more than half.
May as
eight,
well have been 80.
Like, 6 or 8.
It legit felt like 30.
For more reasons than one. One, because they couldn't hit the broadside of a barn. And two, because this Michigan team, whenever they seem to get down, seems to stay that way. And we saw that pretty much in every loss they had this year. So it was an ugly showing. I know a lot of people are really angry. We'll talk a bit later about, you know, how to judge this season as a failure, is it not. I think that's, you know, something interesting that a lot of fans are debating. But as far as that game and that game alone,
yeah, I think just kind of to piggyback off that, I think there's something to be said about the unprepared part of it. I don't want to say that they were caught looking ahead to Gonzaga because Gonzaga and Florida State had played before them. I don't want to say they were looking ahead, but I think that one of this team's biggest downfalls is that at times this season, they started to feel themselves a little bit and kind of lose focus. And And I think that I saw a little, I certainly think I saw some of that on Thursday. The other thing of it is too, is that this is where Michigan State completely exposed them three times this year in that, you know, Texas Tech's defense is not, it's not a defense that really switched a whole lot, but bam, they get into that game and they're switching like crazy because they watched the MSU film and Michigan had never really been able to overcome that. And so I guess lest we forget the first, 12 minutes of that game, like both teams offensively were terrible. And it was, you know, it never in the first, the early going of that game, it never really felt like they were out of it. Now you felt like I was Sam Dodge was there for us. So I was not, it was a basketball game, a rare basketball game that I didn't have to work. So I went to the bar I was watching with friends and I told a buddy of mine, I said, someone's going to get hot with about 5 or 6 minutes left. And whoever does that wins the game. And obviously it wound up being Texas Tech. And my other question, like how many times, this is 2 years in a row now, that Michigan goes up against a team that has a Italian that just shoots lights out from the floor and knocks them out of the tournament. Like how many times is that going to happen now? Like I respect the hell out of it.
It's a thing.
I respect it.
It's a thing.
I respect it. I am Italian. So it's like, I don't know. It's, I have my thoughts on the, I put together something on the website about my thoughts on the season. I know we're going to talk about it. I think I have a feeling that the way I feel about it is going to be somewhat controversial compared to what you guys think about it. But I'm going to stand by it too. You know, I don't know when we're ready to get into that, but as far as that game Thursday, that was just really disappointing because I do think that whoever came out of that game was going to go to the Final Four. Like, for all intents and purposes, that was the Elite Eight game, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And that Michigan, I don't want to say no-showed, but just played so awful. I mean, 1 for 19 from three, and that was only because 3J Baird came off the bench at the end of the game and, you know, splashed one in there. It's like, I'll be honest, since I didn't have to work it, I left the bar with that game still going on with about probably 10 minutes to go. So essentially I checked out.
Dude,
yeah.
I made my post game with 6 minutes.
It was bad.
They only lost by 19. They were down by 25. Yeah. Like in that game, down by 25 in that game was as good as being down 75, 45. In my opinion. Like it's.
Yeah. No question. But I want to address, you know, what Chris had said about unprepared. The reason I don't feel that they were unprepared and I felt they were more timid is that they got good looks, man. They got a lot of good looks in the early going. Yeah. And they just, I mean, they were short-arming shots. I think Iggy airballed one. I know for sure Matthews airballed one real bad.
Didn't
in the
they look tired?
Half. Yeah, I thought they, that's what I mean. The way it looked to me was that they made a bigger deal in their heads about Texas Tech's defense than they really needed to. And that's not to say Texas Tech isn't an outstanding defensive team, because they are. But Michigan had their chances, and when they had open looks, they didn't expect to have the open looks. And sometimes that's the worst part of basketball. That's the worst thing that can happen in basketball.
I think the biggest misconception about that game is that, Texas Tech, we just saw how excellent a defense they have. And make no mistake about it, it absolutely is. But my jaw hit the floor at some of the looks that they were getting from the perimeter. And maybe that was part of the game plan on Chris Beard's part, knowing that this team can't shoot. They haven't really shot well since November at times, but it's, you know, if you're going to leave them open. We'll take our chances. Cause I think we have the guys that can hit more open shots. And I know what the metrics say that Michigan was a better offensive team this year. I know what KenPom says. This was not a better offensive team than last year's team. It just wasn't. Like, I don't buy, you know, efficiency, whatever, that's fine. I don't, turnovers are a big part of those ratings and things like that. This was not a Michigan basketball team that was better offensively than it was the year before. It just wasn't. I won't hear any of the analytics people come bring your spreadsheets to me. That's fine. Like, you can show me percentages, but it just wasn't.
I think we're a little revisionist on Michigan's offense last year, though. Michigan's offense was
no, but
awful
you know when they
year.
Were, you know where they it were good really though. Bad. They were good when it counted, and I don't want to get too far ahead of myself,
right? And that's totally fine. Yeah. But offensively, they were really bad last year, and then they were literally at their best when it was crunch time, and Mar had to go get him a bucket, or Mo had to go get him a bucket.
Show me the crunch time analytics.
Right. In crunch time, when they needed a big bucket, Michigan seemed to get it last year, where this year they didn't. I do think they were a better offensive team throughout the course of the 40 minutes this year than they were last year.
I won't argue that, but, I guess. So sorry, analytics guys. I'm not trying to insult you.
Last year's team did not seem to go through the type of scoring droughts.
I remember some terrible scoring droughts.
Yeah, but
when
did they happen though? They didn't happen from the Big Ten tournament.
But maybe,
on.
But not.
They
not
happened
like,
against. They happened. They happened against Florida okay. State for sure. They
but
happened
that was
against
kind
Houston
of a,
for
that
sure.
Florida State game last year was going to be similar to what we just saw with Texas Tech. Like we knew that was going to be a rock fight. So
right.
I mean, yeah, I get it. I think my biggest problem, and like I said, I know we're going to do outlook and takeaways, but the biggest, I don't want to say asterisk on this season because it's another 30-win year and that's great. That's awesome. Like that cannot be overlooked at all. And I'm not trying to downplay that, but the fact of the matter was when the calendar flipped from December 31st, 2018 to January 1st, 2019, this team went 13-7 down the stretch. They did not, I mean, you could make the argument they didn't win a single big game. They lost all three times of their rival, twice with banners on the line, and they came out and laid an egg in the NCAA tournament. That bothers me. And that will be the legacy of this team to me.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty much, you said it more eloquently than I did, but that's pretty much what I said in my post game as well. It's like, look, it'll be remembered as a good team that should have been a better team, that should have gone farther than they did, and a team that lost to Michigan State three times, and it cost them, like you said, two banners. You asked this question last week, Ant, and I think it's still relevant of would our opinions on this team be different if they just beat MSU one of those times? Yeah, I still think absolutely. Even with the Texas Tech debacle that happened, but ultimately they didn't, and it turns out to be an extremely disappointing end to what should have been a really special season. And in fairness, and this is maybe I'm stretching here, but I will say that this year they caught just a small amount of bad luck, just in the sense that the Big Ten was so good this year that it might have hurt. But like in almost any other year, Michigan wins the Big Ten regular season title. Well, they win
the
Big
likely
Ten tournament
national
title. They probably get a one seed, and who knows where they'd
like,
be right
that's
now.
That's a big part of it. So,
well, that's right. Kind of what I want to get into exactly. too. Is you know, I read your article, Anthony, and I guess I get where it's coming from, and I understand the lasting legacy is, yeah, they did lose to Michigan State three times, but at the end of the day, man, Michigan State was just a better team this year. Like that's just how it goes sometimes. Yeah.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
That's fine. I will concede that 100%. And let's just get it. Like, I feel like this is a good jumping off point to kind of just, I know that it might not be where the show sheet says, but let's just get into that. Like, I want to address that a little bit more because I think the thing that maybe annoys me the most and coming out of that game is that, you know, after Michigan lost that game, it was, it was a rebuilding year anyways, which makes my blood boil. because, okay, when you routed Villanova by 30, I think we kind of knew that that Villanova team wasn't as good as we maybe, you know, as they have been. But then you beat North Carolina. You start 17-0. You go almost a calendar year without losing a basketball game. And I know that some of it may have been smoke and mirrors. They had a couple ones they had to sweat out in there. But this team, this stopped being a rebuilding year when you started 17-0. And forget, you know, I know there were losses at, you know, at Wisconsin, at Iowa, at Penn State. With all of this being said, you played Michigan State three times in the last 3 weeks of the year. You were, you know, that first time they were both atop the Big Ten, kind of 1-2 there, maybe tied. I think Michigan may have been in first. I don't remember. 6 days later, 8 days later, whenever they played again, they played for the Big Ten regular season title. They played again 8 days later, Big Ten tournament title. When you have seasons like that, you played for two banners. You started out as well as you did. At certain points of this basketball season, you are the best college basketball team in the country. It ceases to be a rebuilding year, and your expectations have to change. Now, maybe we were misguided in that we assumed that this team would get better, because that's what every John Beilein team has done heading down the stretch. Every single one, except for the year they didn't make the tournament in 2015. That's what they've done. So I know there were flaws there. I knew there were red flags, but this was not a rebuilding year. When you started the way you did, when you had the players come back that you did, when you played for two banners in 2 weeks, listen, we take for granted how hard it is. Like, Michigan got to the Sweet 16. There are probably all but 10 programs in the country, maybe 15, maybe 20, where winning a tournament game, let alone getting to the Sweet 16, is like, oh my God, like that's an amazing year. This is the fifth time they've been there in the Sweet 16 the last 7 years or so. This is the golden era of Michigan basketball. All I'm saying out of all of this is that if you feel like Michigan botched an opportunity this year, if you feel like, as you know, because they are, this isn't a to me, this is right now a nationally elite program with one of the four or five best coaches in the game, period. And that you went out in the Sweet 16 with all of that is disappointing to me. And I feel like that they missed an opportunity or failed this year. I'm not going to argue with you. I won't argue with you, because there is a degree of that there. Yes.
So when I read your article, I completely agree with you in the sense that expectations do change throughout the season. And I think it was a disappointing end to this Michigan season, but I can't go as far as to call it a failure in the sense that, like, Michigan, they were 18th preseason in the country in the polls, 19th in the coaches poll preseason. So expectations for how you judge a season at the end of it, I personally think has to be judged on what the expectations were going into the season. Now, your expectations change, but at that point, it can be a disappointment or a failure. And I don't think this one was a failure, because I did not expect this team to win 30 games this year.
I'll get to mine.
I mean, I don't know if I don't even think, you know, coming into this year, I expected Michigan to get to the Sweet 16, to be quite honest with you. I guess I was uncertain. I can't say that I didn't expect them to get to the Sweet 16, but if you'd have told me at the beginning of the year they didn't, I wouldn't have been that surprised. Right. You know what I'm saying? Like,
that I feel like when this team's issues that they had, they couldn't shoot very well. The shot selection at times wasn't good. The ball movement at times, outside of Xavier Simpson, was not good. To me, many of their issues were self-inflicted. I think that their limitations are as a team had nothing to do with the fact that they weren't talented enough to do it. Their limitations were...
I don't think they had that many talented shooters, though. Like, Jordan Poole's gotten hot before, but like as an overall perimeter shooter, he's not not Duncan Robinson. Right. He's not Nick Stauskas. You know what I'm saying? Like, I feel like Michigan's. I kept hearing that in games this year too. I don't know if you guys got annoyed by it, but they kept saying, like, if Michigan had a bad shooting night, oh, this is so unlike a John Beilein team. I'm like, you guys obviously have not watched this team this year.
So that, yeah, I said that last week. I was like, people that were complaining that they don't shoot, like, where have you been?
Right.
Like, that, this is what they are. But I don't, like, yes, we are used to that early era of John Beilein basketball was that, you know, you had teams scored in the high 70s, low 80s.
I can't believe none of the announcers were asking where the 131 was.
Yeah, wow. Throwback there. You need to be able to hit shots, yeah. But I don't. It seemed like, not that everything was there to win a national title, because very clearly, like, they're not as good as Michigan State, not as good as Virginia. Obviously they're not as good as Texas Tech and Auburn. Like, we'll see what happens with them. What they've been able to do is extremely impressive, but it's, I don't know
what sucks in a single elimination tournament, though, right, is that if Michigan knocks down, like, they had probably 7 or 8 good looks in the first half. I won't say open, but good looks. If they knock down, like, 3 or 4 of them, that's a completely different ball game. You know, then they started to press. Like, that's the problem.
Of course.
If Michigan and Texas Tech play in a 7-game series, I'm guessing it goes 7, to be quite honest with you. But it's a single elimination tournament. Like John Beilein said, they picked a bad day to have a bad day. And it's a very disappointing end to what ultimately was a pretty good season and a really fun ride. And that's, I guess, going back to where it all starts in the article that you wrote. I can't call it a failure because my expectations changed, yes. But at the same time, like, I'm not going to penalize the legacy of this season based off the fact that they won some games I didn't expect them to win, you know?
Right. No, and that's fair too. Like, I don't think it's a straight up failure. Indiana did this year was a failure.
Right.
What, you know, think of, you know, name another team that had a disappointing
Michigan
season.
Football.
Yeah. See, that's the other thing is that I don't like that they're getting – this is another point that I made in the article is that I'm not a fan of the people who just use this Michigan bat – like Michigan basketball is an appetizer that gets them closer to, you know, even spring football. There's going to be like 30,000, 40,000, 50,000 people in Ann Arbor next Saturday for the spring football game. Like, and a lot of those people are the ones who show up out of nowhere – when things go bad and go, oh, this team is mentally soft. Tip Michigan, they're just like the football team. They can't win big games. Like, that is so – this is not dogging Jim Harbaugh, but to, like, bring that and what's going on with them into a conversation with what John Beilein did, like, we're upset that John Beilein's team didn't win enough big games. Like, they haven't even won a big game yet. Get out of here with that.
There is a similarity, though, that they both had really good defenses and a really frustrating offense.
Yeah, but give me the coach and the staff that's done it.
They're not even comparable programs right now, I don't think.
No, they're not.
And that's why, just jumping in here, I understand both your points of view. I lean more towards the word disappointment than I do failure, because in hindsight, we look at, okay, Michigan State was better this year. In hindsight, we look and say Texas Tech was ultimately better. Like, what the football team did, that's a failure. You win 10 games in a row, just beating the crap out of your opponents pretty much every game. You are favored going into the biggest game ever. And you not only lose, you get obliterated, you get embarrassed. And then, and I know a lot of people ignore it, I don't. You come out in the bowl game and do the exact same freaking thing that you've done each of the last 2 years in your bowl game. So that's a failure. If we want to go back and talk about failures, what Michigan State did a season ago, that's a failure. Yes, won the Big Ten championship. They knew what the expectations were. Get back to the Final Four, win a national championship, and they gag. That's a failure. Now, what this year's Michigan team did, I think disappointment is the word that comes to mind to me. There are things they failed at. I think they failed at finding a premier scorer. I think they failed at being a more balanced offense. Not more balanced, but more consistent offense. And again, in the Sweet 16, or if you just want to say in the NCAA tournament in general, that was a failure. They didn't hang any banners. That's a failure. But when you take the season as a whole, I can't completely say failure.
No, it's and I'll admit, like right here, right now, breaking news. Yeah, that may have been worded a little strongly. And even, you know, if you all I'm saying is that if you've the expectation, like, there's not a player in that locker room that didn't think that this team could win the Big Ten, win the Big Ten tournament, and, you know, go to the Final Four. So 1, 2, 3, they failed to hit those three goals. And all I'm saying is that if you feel like they failed, there's, you know, a bit of failure in this season, I think it's okay to feel that way, because really, to me, and I'm taking that as a positive about this program, is that,
yeah,
because you think you can do more. Like 6 or 7 years ago, and I know I kind of, you know, poo-pooed this line of thought in the article, like 10 years ago, 7 years ago, we said Michigan's in the Sweet 16. You're like, wow, all right, let's go. Like, nobody could have ever expected John Beilein to do what he's done at Michigan. And I guess all I'm saying here is that with them being, like, I think right now, like, they don't have the name recognition, the history of Duke, Kansas, all that. But you talk about, you know, the Duke teams, Kentucky teams, like, Michigan's teams have outshined their expectations in the tournament last 5, 6, 7 years, a lot more than the Dukes and the Kentuckys of the world. So I do consider them a bit in that class. And in that regard, I'm disappointed that their worst performance of the year came in, you know, a single elimination format. And it's frustrating. If it's embarrassing, yeah, I have no issue with it if it feels that way, because I think that just is a sign that it's not good enough to just, you know, I've been saying it since, it feels like I've said it for months, play 4 games in this tournament. Don't even have to win that 4th game. Just play the 4th game. And I feel like you have, you know, I feel pretty good with where things wound up. And they played 3 games. So it's not a failure. It's not a huge, like, you know, black cloud over the program. Like, they're going to be back and they might lose some guys. And we'll talk about that later on. But overall, it's, to me, the legacy of this team is that after they started hot, they went 13-7 down the stretch. They lost all 3 times their rival and just didn't really check any of the boxes outside of made to the Sweet 16, no, which
that's a really good segue, Anthony, because I think this team could be very much back in the same position and a chance to go to a Final Four next year, but kind of dependent on who stays and who goes. I mean, we're probably conceding Charles Matthews is gone, right? He's gone.
He's gone. Beilein said that he's going to graduate.
That's what I would figure. Now, the interesting part is, because you look back on this season, you want to talk about disappointments. This was a very heralded freshman class, right? You know, obviously Iggy, and he played very well, arguably Michigan's MVP for the season as a whole. But Brandon Johns, David DeJulius, Keston came in, made some, you know, had some nice games down the stretch a little bit, but overall, not as much of an impact as I would have thought this year, you know? So I think Michigan's success next year is going to come a lot with the progression of those guys, but they also need perimeter shooting. The guy like, how do you say his last name? Bajima? Yeah, Cole.
We'll go with that.
Pajamas. Yeah, exactly. But, like, he should help, hopefully, if he's able to get there. But we don't know what this makeup is going to look like. But if it's mostly the returning guys, obviously you're going to get a little attrition, probably some transfers of guys that did get a whole lot of chance to play. I wouldn't be surprised one bit to not see Eli Brooks in a Michigan uniform next year. But I'm optimistic, I guess, for next year. I'm like really optimistic. Michigan should be like one of the top 5 teams in the country next year, because you're probably getting Teske back. You're getting Xavier Simpson back. Poole and Iggy are going to test the waters. Maybe one of them's a first round pick. And even if they're not, if they go pro, I wouldn't blame them, I guess, especially. And I know we want to touch on some of the idiot fan base and Jordan Poole's dad's tweet. But this team has a really good chance to do something special next year, like similar to what the reason Michigan State is doing what Michigan State's doing this year, and the reason they didn't do it last year, is because of experience. Cassius Winston grew up exponentially from last year to this year. He turned himself into probably the best college guard in the country. You know, obviously Ja Morant is probably the best guard in the country.
You know, since they beat Duke, I think we can I'm just the best college basketball.
I won't go that far because I thought Zion was incredible yesterday, even in a loss. Like I still think Zion was the best player in the country, but
he's a force of nature without a doubt. But Michigan State is still playing, and a huge part of that
has to do with RJ Barrett too.
Like, he is
not. What did Zion? Barely even touch the ball down the stretch. But anyway, back to my point. You know, and
Hero Ball sucks.
There's a lot of room for improvement for a lot of guys on this Michigan team. Like, and they're going to be very experienced next year. I think they could be just like Michigan State this year. You know, they're going to have the experience with Xavier, another year for DeJulius coming off the bench. They could be as good as Michigan State. I don't know if they have a Cassius Winston type player, but they're going to be a deep team. Like, they could be Villanova-esque from last year, is how optimistic I am.
Yeah, well, the biggest number one, I mean, aside from the guys, I think that I've seen grades or mock drafts with Iggy in the back half of the first round.
Right,
if
correct.
That's the case, he should go. My gut says he probably will go. Jordan Poole, I'm a little less certain on. But like you said, it's weird that it's usually been the Michigan teams that we, or at least in the last couple of years, the teams that we least expect to kind of go on these runs have been the ones that have. Obviously the national title game in 2013, that was a very good team. And they showed it throughout the year. But the team after that with, you know, Stauskas and those guys that came back, we never expected that. Obviously, nobody could have expected they'd go to the national title game last year. And this year, yeah, you could make the argument that in some ways it may have been John Beilein's best or most talented team. You could make that argument. I don't know if I'd go there now that we know what the totality of the season was. But I think that the biggest thing that needs to happen over this offseason is that Xavier Simpson needs to get better offensively.
Thank you.
Because you cannot play 4-on-5 basketball. And that's no disrespect to him. I know the hook shots are cute, but teams are leaving him wide open to shoot for a reason. And he does a great job distributing and the assists are always good. He doesn't turn over the ball a whole lot. But man, oh man, like if that's, you have to get offense from your point guard position, especially if Jordan Poole does leave, you're looking at a situation now where who plays the two? Like, is it, do you do like a 2-point guard thing with David DeJulius out there too? Are you throwing Adrian Nunez into the fire? Obviously, regardless, is going to be a big summer for him. Do they maybe explore the grad transfer market, which I think is, if a scholarship opens up, I think there's a very good chance they do that. But it's, to me, like, I don't know, who's going to create offensively is far and away my biggest concern, because I think that the two guys that have the best shot of doing it are Brazdeikis and Jordan Poole, and they might both be gone, which is obviously a huge concern.
You're right. I love Xavier Simpson. Right, I think Xavier Simpson has done some remarkable things for the program. The guy had a triple double this year. You know, he's been really good. But it's in a lot of these big games, like Texas Tech, like Villanova, like the games against Cassius this year, where his flaws, more than anybody else's flaws on the team, except for maybe Jordan Poole's, show the most. And yeah, he scored 0 points on Thursday. You're not going to win an inner squad scrimmage game if your starting point guard scores 0 points. So that was incredibly disappointing because I like him so much, and you're absolutely right. He needs to develop as more of a shooter. I'm not saying he needs to put up 15 to 18 a game, but Jesus, give me 10. Make
could
one.
Could
three
you imagine
a game.
Xavier Simpson
Just
with a pull-up
like,
jumper?
Let's focus on that. I know it'd be awesome. Now, as far as the pro market, who's gonna go, who's gonna stay? I'm I gotta throw my hands and say I'm just a terrible judge of that stuff. I'm not an NBA scout. I guess I just don't understand what some people want and some people don't. To me, like, if a guy is really, really great in college, to me that means he should probably go pro. Like, Cassius Winston is probably going to come back next year. By some miracle, he's probably going to come back.
They're probably going to bring everyone back.
Right. Quite honestly. Which makes zero sense to me. Because Cassius Winston has had, probably behind Magic Johnson, the greatest season ever by a point guard in Michigan State history. Yes, you could say Scott Skiles when they were terrible and didn't win anything. No, I mean, like, a legitimate season where they won something. He's been amazing, and he's probably going to come back. Jordan Poole, who spent half this season on vacation, is considering going pro. That, and I understand he's got upside. The guy goes away for long periods of time. Iggy, I can kind of understand a bit more, but I mean, he's not a great defender. He's all right. He's an all right on ball defender. Gets lost defensively. Gives up a lot of open shots. Like, these are not guys who I look at and say they are guys who can play in the league right now. I didn't feel that way about Glenn Robinson either. And for the first 4 years, I was right. What, he got released by half the league, and now apparently he's found a home in Detroit and seems to be doing all right. I mean, I always rooted for the guy, so I fully admit I just don't have a gauge on that type of stuff.
Yeah, I think in, like, obviously today's NBA, like, you can get away with not playing defense.
That's true.
Like,
that's very, very
true. If Brazdeikis was to go play, like, for the Houston Rockets, like, that would not be an issue at
all.
It'd
be a match made in heaven. Yeah.
Yeah, honestly. But to me, the thing, and I'm not here to, I'm of the opinion, and it's a cop-out answer, like, if you're ready to go, just go. Like, just go. Because we've seen, you know, really the only time, I can't say it was necessarily a benefit, but it seems like the only time a guy has been a big, like, draft prospect as a senior was when Frank Kaminsky was at Wisconsin. He ended up being, I think, like the number 10th overall pick or something like that, somewhere in that range. But normally you don't have a lot to gain by coming back if the NBA wants you now. And I, like, this is the thing with Jordan Poole. I think that he will test the waters. We know that they can declare without hiring an agent and it's still fair game. I actually believe they can even participate in the combine and still come back. So I just feel like, you know, there's, because of that shot against Houston and because at times he can get very hot. I think there is a thought out there that he is a amazing shooter. And I think when NBA teams put on the film, they're going to see that, yeah, this guy kind of goes away. And at times just, I said it to a guy that was sitting next to me at the Big Ten tournament in Chicago. Like, that's the closest I've ever been up to him, like, seeing him play in a game. And you could just see in his face, like, sometimes he's just, like, I don't want to say blacks out, but it's like he's just not always present and there.
You're right.
So I tend to think he'll be back because I think that another year, I really do think another year, I think that he could take a big step next year.
Me
I
too.
Know it was a little, right. It was a little much to ask for this year. Maybe, you know, maybe it was held to the standard of, oh, well, look at what Nick Stauskas did from, you know, freshman to sophomore. Again, development isn't linear, so you never really know. But, you know, Brazdeikis, we forget that he's already 20 years old, and that is
point. It's a really good
the
point.
NBA. The NBA is, like, for whatever reason, if you're like 21 or 22 coming out as a draft prospect, they look at you like you're 40. So we'll see what happens there. I think that physically Iggy's ready to go. I think that, you know, he can develop into, you know, a nice little role player, but I'm not quite sure what his ceiling is. We saw some big games early on in the year. I think that the guy can be, I really do think the sky's the limit for him. But we'll see if, you know, I'd love to see what he does in another summer of, like, Camp Sanderson type deal, but if he's ready to go, he's ready to go. I can't hold that against any of those guys. But again, if there's already questions about who's going to be able to create offensively, if one of them goes, if none of them goes, really, but if they both go, it's going to get, because Charles will be gone too. So you're looking at, well, I'll just say projected starting five. Simpson, DeJulius, Livers, Colin Castleton, John Teske.
I really think Brandon Johns, right? if he's capable, if he progresses to the point, he's going to be a great four. Like he should be a starter next year, I would think.
Could be. Mm-mm. But we didn't see a whole lot of him down the stretch. He got popped by Castleton. So
yeah,
I don't know anything.
I think Castleton would have a tough time playing the four. And I understand we're positionless basketball and things like that, but in John Beilein's offense, having two guys.
Yeah. I was just throwing the name out there.
So did the coaching staff.
Yeah. Well, that's where I almost wonder, like, does he maybe transfer? Like, we'll see. I don't think he would. I'm not sure, but
I mean, to be honest, but
we'll see. Like, I don't know. These are things that
he could
about.
Make a.
There's gonna be some.
Xavier Tillman played a little more last year for Michigan State, but Xavier Tillman didn't make a big impact on State last year. You know, like he could be that guy, sort of thing for Michigan next year. So,
yeah. Oh, sure, absolutely. There's no doubt about that at all. And maybe it would have been a little bit different. Obviously, it would have felt a little different if the records, if they started 13-7 and then finished 17-0 and then got, you know, that would be a little bit different. But that's where I think, you know, it's going to be another one. I'll call my shot right now. It's going to be one of those non-conference situations next year where it's going to be rocky to start out because there are just so many questions to answer.
Assuming these guys go.
Yeah. Well, even if they stay. You know, there's still plenty of questions there. So I don't know, man. This is a very interesting time for them because they either rebound or I don't want to say taper off. That's probably not the right way to put it, but it's going to be interesting to see where this thing goes from here because I do think that there have been a few times in John Beilein's career where his staff and really he as a coach have had to maybe adapt and evolve a little bit. Sure. They were able to do it when it really started when Billy Donlin was hired. They kind of started to focus more on defense, but then Yaklich comes in and you know they flip the switch and he's you know arguably one of the best defensive minds in the game right now in terms of what he's been able to do. Now that came at the sacrifice. I don't know if it came at the sacrifice or if it just happened to be happenstance of the guys they have recruited where they just haven't been able to shoot as well the last few years, but. You know, we'll see what happens with all that, but they're going to have to find a way to adapt to offensively. Cause I think that John Beilein will watch this tape from this year and they are going to look at a little bit different. They're going to try some different things. So I'm interested in seeing where it goes. I mean, I had the article that said, oh, it was a failure. I think the failure, obviously there's a negative connotation with the word failure because you failed. That's, you know, that's an F, but I don't think that failure necessarily means that, you know, shut down the program. They suck. Bring in all new coaches, fire everybody. Like that's not at all. It's just like, I don't know what's next for them. And it's kind of exciting.
So how are we feeling about the Final Four?
MSU's going to win.
They're playing the best out of anyone in the country. No question.
I can't even tell you how confident I am in this. Like, they're going to win it. And you got to play the game. If they lose, I'll be happy to come on here and all my other platforms and say, hey, you know what? I was wrong. But they're not going to lose. I mean, they just knocked off Goliath. They just beat the team that nobody thought anyone would beat. And, look, there's three really good coaches in the Final Four, and there's one legend. And I'm going with the legend. And I would assume Virginia makes it to the national championship. Twice Izzo has gone up against Tony Bennett as a lower seed in the NCAA tournament and has knocked him off.
Well, that's what a lot of people thought about Coach K and Tom Izzo, though, going into this Elite Eight game, too.
Not me. Not me.
That's true. But in fairness, yeah, coming into yesterday's game, I did pick Michigan State to win that game. In my bracket, I didn't. Coming into the game, I did. But Tom Izzo, I have had some people respond to that and say, you know, it's kind of the same principle. Yeah, Izzo's a lot better coach than Tony Bennett. And I trust that at some point and he's played him a lot more times. So, and look, Virginia, as good as they've played at points in this tournament, I mean,
good, man. They really have not looked that good.
There's a lot of tight butts on that bench right now.
There's also the part though, like I heard it today. I think I heard Seth Greenberg talking about it. Like if Cassius Winston were to get in foul trouble, like Michigan State would be in some deep shit.
Yeah, I don't think Foster Lawyer's played since I think the first game of the tournament. I mean, maybe he did a bit.
Cassius doesn't
one,
really get
I
into
don't.
Foul trouble.
No,
though.
No, he does not.
He's a smart player.
Yeah.
And this is the thing about Izzo and the Final Fours is that when he's been there in the past, there's always been a, it seems like there's always been a Coach K or a Roy Williams or a Kansas there that were like, oh, geez, well, here we go. The magic run is over. I think Chris kind of hit on this. Like,
yeah,
he is the best coach left in the Final Four. And I think he has, I would argue that Virginia is still probably a better team, but they're not playing better. Michigan State is looser. They've got the magic run pixie dust. I don't see a scenario where they don't win it. And I had Michigan fans tweet at me going, because I said, like, it's going to happen. They're going to win it all. People go, oh, what about Texas Tech? Like, Cassius was able to figure out him? Michigan. He's going to be able to figure out Texas Tech's, the Spider-Man team, like we've been saying for a few weeks. Like, it's the same team, basically.
I will say, though, if I was a Michigan State fan, I would be worried. Chris just nailed it on the head for why I think there should be concerned if you are a Michigan State fan. I think Michigan State's the best team left in the tournament. However, Chris just mentioned, man, they just slayed Goliath. Like, they just did that. It felt like they won the national championship last night. They still got two games to play. Like, there's something mentally about that, too. Like, you just got over the biggest hump of your season, and you still have two games to play.
What I always point to is when Wisconsin beat Kentucky that year, Kentucky was undefeated. And Wisconsin viewed that as their national championship. And I think that carried over for the first half of the championship game against Duke, and then they gagged that one away. So, yeah, I think there is potential for that, but I can't bet against – I mean, not that I'm betting, but, I'm speaking metaphorically. I just can't bet against this Michigan State team anymore. Like,
I don't think Tom Izzo would let his team lose focus like that. Like, maybe if it was a Final Four and they did that, I could see that happening. But now they've got, they're going to obviously enjoy that one on Sunday. Probably took a lot of Monday to enjoy it as well. But from there on out, like, it's going to be all business for them. And I think that, we've just seen this Michigan State team refocus itself at so many times throughout the year where they had that three-game losing streak where they lost to, I think, Purdue, Illinois, Indiana, like all in a row. We're able to bounce back from that. They beat, they'd already beaten Michigan for a Big Ten title. So the Big Ten tournament title, like, it would have been easy to maybe lose focus and overlook them and get ready for the tournament. They didn't. They refocused, beat them again. There was a lack of focus maybe a little bit in that game against Bradley, but, blew the doors off them from there and really had handled everyone up till that point until they played Duke. And that's – I just feel like this is from my basketball viewing life. I wasn't really paying attention to college basketball in 2000 when they won it all. This is the best coaching job that Tom Izzo has ever done. And it's a lot like, just like last year was, I think John Beilein's best coaching job at Michigan.
Yeah.
Followed by maybe his second best job the year before when they had the plane thing. So just a great coach that has an excellent, excellent player and a good enough team around them to really do some damage. And I don't see how they don't finish it off. And we're not here to trust me. The three of us are not here to fluff Michigan State. Like we've had plenty of chuckles at their expense, throughout our little year plus run here so far, but you just have to give credit where credit's due. And I,
Yeah, I mean, if you expect us to come on here and say they suck, well, I mean, what are you out of your mind? They're playing in the Final Four. They just beat Duke. Like, it's a brilliant season that they've put together. It is very, very annoyingly similar to what Michigan did a season ago, which sucks. And I will, this is a slight tiny bit off topic, but I will say this. MSU won yesterday. They deserved to win yesterday. They outplayed Duke. But for a number one overall seed, it kind of felt like Duke's path to the Final Four was a lot more difficult than a lot of the other teams in this tournament. And maybe it was because they just didn't play as well. But like UCF was far and away better than any team MSU played in the first three games of the tournament.
I think LSU would beat UCF, to be quite honest with you. I know UCF had a really, really good game against Duke, and they had a really good game plan against Duke. But at the end of the day, I think LSU would be too fast for UCF.
I think the difference is that I don't think the teams that played afraid of Duke. I think that like UCF was not afraid at all, and it took Taco Fall. That was a weird as hell matchup, obviously with how big he is. And then Aubrey Dawkins goes off. Like they also had a lot of, Duke had a lot of weird stuff happen to them where they could have been out of this tournament, a week ago. After that first weekend, if a shot falls, they could have been out on Friday if that shot at the buzzer falls, the tip back. Like, that was just a really odd – no one can say that they weren't battle-tested and weren't tested throughout the year coming to that game against Michigan State. I think they're – it kind of just summed up why I thought that Michigan State would beat them, is that I just felt like Michigan State – was there's able also, to hit more shots.
Yeah, and there's also that.
And they did.
Which so, obviously happened.
There's also a point that I wanted to make. The run that Michigan State made in the first half, when Duke went on the 12 or 14 nothing run, when they made it 30-21 and went up 9 in the first half, like last year's Michigan State team, they would have cowered out. Like that would have been the end of the game right there. This team... Yeah, they came back and they took the lead at halftime. Like that won them that game, and probably, looking forward, we're all in agreement, might have won them a national championship this year. That run in the first half.
Yeah, and you know why they were able to fight that off is because their point guard had been through the last few years of disappointments. Because you had to go through that. And I'm not gonna start, we can talk about the one and done rule and all that in a different show, but I just feel like in order to win a title, I feel like you kind of have to go through some shit along the way. And it's not just in one season. Like you have to, it's a couple of years of pain and I don't know what to call it, but sometimes you just have to experience, heartbreak in order to say, put your head down and say, not again, this is not going to happen again. And really to me, that's been the theme of watching that Michigan State team, is that it's been a conscious effort by a guy like Cassius Winston to go, you know what, guys, we're not doing this again. Like, it's just not going to happen.
Well,
yeah.
Yes.
Are we done talking about Michigan State? Because I'm really just tired.
Do we have anything to add?
I'm so tired
for this.
Any other tournament thoughts, I guess?
No, I don't really have any. I think.
I don't know.
I've been incredibly impressed by the job Bruce Pearl's done. I mean, if we're talking other coaches, done a great job. I mean, this is a guy who, had a lot of success. I think I view Tennessee basketball kind of how I view, I think similar to how people view Michigan basketball, where it's second tier there. And he did, and he made people care about Tennessee for a while. I think he got fired. I think there were recruiting violations, and it for a time it kind of tarnished his legacy, but he's come back at Auburn. They've won 11 games in a row. If not for the injury, I would almost be tempted to pick them to beat Virginia. They've had just an unbelievable run. And I'll also add the Purdue Virginia game. One of the best college basketball games I've ever seen.
Yeah. We all need to eat our words a little bit here on Purdue. Cause I think that there was a show we did later in the year. We're like, Purdue's just not that good, but here they are right at the top of the Big Ten standings.
Well, we saw what, like, because the previous month prior, Carson Edwards is putting up 30 shots a game and making eight. And we all of a sudden we get into the NCAA tournament and realize, oh, so this is what Purdue could be if a lot of those shots went in.
And
that's the type of player we saw. Draft stock just went through the roof in those four NCAA tournament games. So,
yeah. Well, it was as recent as 2 weeks ago, whatever it was, that I watched them 10 feet away from me lose to Minnesota in Chicago.
Yeah.
So it was like, the way they were able to flip the switch, like, hats off to them. And what I think was hilarious, we may have talked about this before, I'm not really sure, but when it was going to be Rick Barnes versus a Rick Barnes team against a Matt Painter team. Talk about two guys who have kind of made a living by flaming out in the tournament, never reaching expectations.
Yeah.
I'll be honest, I was kind of pulling for Purdue in that game, even though, like,
I found myself pulling for him too. Yeah.
My title game, which is no longer in play because Gonzaga lost. I had Gonzaga over Virginia. That would have meant that my title game would have been knocked out before we even got to Sunday. It's hats off to them. I mean, Matt Painter's a good coach that it was good to see them make a run with one of the teams that wasn't expected to, as opposed to flame out with one of their better teams that they've had.
Still though, man, just like a heartbreaking loss in that Elite Eight. Like,
straight brutal. Just,
God, yeah.
You don't recover from that.
But shout out to Carson Edwards, man. One of the best tourney runs that you'll see out of anyone. But the show goes on, I guess. You know, the Big Ten's got, I'll be honest, I'd rather see Purdue in this situation, you know, than Michigan State. But, we're here.
You know, though, I'm just going to say this. Like, as much as it hurts me to fluff Michigan State, it's time for Izzo to get his second one. It just is. 20 years apart, whatever it is. Like, it's a likable group. And
debatable.
It's just time for them. I can't say I'm rooting for that to happen. But
any team
with
Matt McQuaid on it is not likable to me.
I'll say this, and I know I feel like we've said it before, but if, you know what, never mind. I was going to say if they don't do it this time, they'll never have another opportunity, but we've said that too many times. If they don't win it this year, they'll probably be right back there next year.
Well,
anyway, so.
All righty. I think anything else to add, fellas?
As we're recording, it looks like Kentucky has reached a long-term deal with John Calipari, so no Calipari to UCLA happening, it appears. So.
You want to talk about a fan base that might be just too out of their minds. That guy, he has success every single year, and they still, some of them try and run him out. Crazy to me.
Well, that's kind of bringing the show full circle. Like I said, I think that people, fans in general, whether you're a fan of, you know, North Carolina, Duke basketball, you're a fan of Michigan basketball, Michigan State basketball, whatever. People just take for granted how hard it is to get where they go. You know, I know that with the one and dones that Cal has pulled there, I think people kind of expect them to win a national title every year. And yeah, when you start stacking years where it doesn't happen for a while, it's disappointing. But I just don't think that in this sport, you can make the national title your goal in football because there's only 12 games. And, you know, if you murder everyone, there's a path to the college football playoff for you. But in this sport where you just have a bad night from the floor and things don't go your way and you're done, it is what it is. I would take him over you know, Tubby Smith or...
Oh, God,
Billy Gillespie was another one. It's like the hair metal song goes, like, you don't know what you got till it's gone.
I like it. That'll about wrap it up for us. Chris, where can we find you on social media, my man?
My mainstay is my Twitter page. You can find me at Castellani2014. That's at Castellani 2014. There you'll see the link to my YouTube page tomorrow, I believe. I'll be posting a little review of the first two episodes of the rebooted Twilight Zone, which I watched today. Spoiler alert, it's very, very good. And also if you want to see me on Instagram, that's Chris Castle 95. That's ChrisCastle95. 95. I have gotten several DMs on Twitter lately. And I try to get back to as many as I can. If I haven't responded to yours yet, unless you just said something really stupid, I promise I will. So hope to see you on my feed.
Anthony,
and thank you
how
very
about
much
you?
For all the support.
You can follow me on Twitter at Anthony T. Broom. Instagram, I guess, AT Broom, I think is my, I always change it, so I forget what it is. Obviously follow our show at Brewcast Show, follow the website at Maize and Brew. Shout out to the people that did, I got a few screenshots of 5-star reviews from a few people. I have a few t-shirts to send out. I will get those sent out probably sometime this week, but if that's something you're looking to do, like I said last week, leave us a 5-star review. Say some nice things about us, screenshot it, tweet it to me, and I will hook you up. I've got some swag here. So thanks for your support. And it's going to get interesting here. Basketball's done. Spring football will be over in a week. We might. We're going to have
looking forward to it. But yeah. You can find me on Twitter at Luke Gherardi, LukeGhiardi. Go follow me on Twitter. We're going to have some fun in the offseason, that's for sure. And can't wait to continue to talk about maybe some spring ball. And, well, at the end of the month, in a couple of weeks, we got Endgame coming up. Can't wait to talk about that one with you guys, too.
Oh, yeah, by the way, by the time you listen to this show, I believe Endgame tickets will be on sale on Tuesday. They've already got showtime. They already have showtimes posted. I'm going to be going at 8:15 a.m. on the Friday it comes out, because I can't go opening night because it's the NFL draft. But
can't wait to do it. So this has been a great edition of Brewcast. Make sure you still go and leave those 5-star reviews, subscribe, download, spread the word, and we'll be back next week on Brewcast.